What is up, Janksters? It's your boy, Graham, also known as HamHawks42 on the internet. And today we're going to be talking about another one of the Lord of the Rings cards. We're going to be talking about Gandalf the Grey. So this card is interesting for a lot of reasons, so let's just dive on into it. I tend to preamble, so let's just cut that and let's get right into the card. So it is a 3/4 Avatar Wizard for 3 blue-red. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, choose one that hasn't been chosen. You may tap or untap target permanent. Gandalf the Grey deals 3 damage to each opponent. Copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. Or put Gandalf on top of its owner's library. So I really like all of these modes, and they all represent powers that we see Gandalf use throughout the series in one way or another. Gandalf is an interesting character. He's actually pretty complicated. You know, we see him in The Hobbit as well as the Lord of the Rings itself, and he does a ton, and we also don't see, like, really kind of under the hat and really get a good glimpse of what's going on inside his head at any point. He's a pretty enigmatic character and clearly incredibly powerful. If you're familiar with, like, Silmarillion and whatnot, you'll know he is actually, like, a demigod being. I can never keep track of what is the Maiar versus the Valar versus, I feel like there's one other one. So, Tolkien scholars out there, I'm sorry, I'm not one of your peers. It is what it is. But him being an avatar wizard actually makes sense because he's like a godlike immortal being. He's not just like a dude in a hat. He's kind of a big deal, as all the wizards are. Like Radagast, Saruman, the blue ones whose names we don't know. Like, they all have these, like, they are all these mythic caliber beings. Like, they're kind of a big deal. So the fact that Gandalf is just like a chill dude who, like, works with our heroes is pretty fantastic. And the fact that Saruman ends up being a bad guy is also a big freaking deal because, like, okay, this is a very powerful enemy. Which, anyway, I get ahead of myself. So does the card make sense? Is this a good representation of Gandalf? We also have a couple of other, as I understand it, Gandalf, Friend of Hobbits is a card that they spoiled art for, but they haven't shown the card yet. And presumably there'll also be a Gandalf the White. I don't recall if that's been officially spoiled or not, but the fact that this one is called Gandalf the Grey is pretty clear that Gandalf the White's going to be here too. In any event, does this make sense? Does Gandalf make sense as an is-it creature? Honestly, they could have made him a planeswalker, and I wouldn't have been mad at that, in the same way that they did with, like, some of the D&D characters, like Lolth and Eliwick, like, where they aren't, like, planeswalkers within the story, but that templating for a card kind of works for the character, so just go with it. They could have done that here, but they chose not to. Instead, they went with kind of the Solkanar templating, where you get to pick, you know, from a laundry list of abilities, one of which is detrimental, but you have to pick it at some point. So I like that. And actually, it's funny. In certain situations, that last mode of putting Gandalf on top of its owner's library is very detrimental. You know, if it's a powerful 3, it's a 3/4 with a lot of cool abilities, maybe, and it's a 5 cost creature. You want to keep it around, right? You definitely do. So returning it to the top of your owner's library is kind of a bummer. That said, if your opponent targets Gandalf with a kill spell, being able to cast an opt and to say nope, and it, like, have him just kind of yeet himself off the battlefield, that's pretty cool. Like, that's actually really nice. Additionally, you can flicker Gandalf, and that resets what modes are considered to have been chosen, so you can start at the top and keep working your way down. So I like that. All of these effects, too, are situationally powerful. You know, being able to tap or untap target permanent, being able to, like, untap a mana source that's producing a lot of mana, like a Nykthos or something, that's huge. Also, being able to tap down a pesky blocker if you're going in for the attack could be relevant as well, and sometimes exactly what you need to make sure you get in for lethal. So, okay, cool. So that effect doesn't read like it's very powerful, but in certain circumstances, it absolutely can be. So if you've built your deck to capitalize on that, great. Dealing 3 damage to each opponent, that kind of feels like just free value. You know, it's not amazing, but if you're running burn strategies, your opponent's life total is going to be whittling down. Being able to get in for 3, basically for free, is pretty awesome. The mode that I really think is going to set Gandalf apart, and the reason that most people are going to want to play Gandalf, is that the third mode. Copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. Copying spells is busted. It just is. Like, no matter what, it's just how it goes. So the ability to copy a spell is a big frickin' deal. I think that's meaningful. People are going to be using that with extra turn spells. They're going to be using it with huge bombs like Invoke Despair or Magma Opus. Like, that's absolutely going to happen. Be aware of it. And I think that's actually just really, really powerful. And having that option is really awesome. The fact that this is a 5 drop means it's probably not going to be in... I'll be surprised if this is playable in, you know, 60-card competitive formats. Outside of maybe some control decks, I guess, could maybe make use of it. But for the most part, I think you're probably not going to want this in those formats. In Commander, though, this thing's going to be fun. It's going to add an element to the board in a really interesting way that people are going to have to kind of stand up and make note of. And I think that's great. That's fantastic. Flavorfully, does this make sense? So we've seen Gandalf, so as far as tap or untap target permanent, I mean, we've seen Gandalf manipulate stuff. That is something, actually, have we seen Gandalf just like simply like prestidigitate something? I don't think we actually have, which, come to think of it, is kind of weird. Like, whenever he uses his abilities, it tends to be these huge, grandiose shows of force. You know, like when you think about the showdown with the Balrog, I mean, that's like 3 damage to each opponent. That's like a big blast. Like, I'm doing this creature in with magic. Like, okay, that's neat, I suppose. And honestly, the most flavorful mode here that I see, I mean, being able to copy target instant sorcery, cool. The most flavorful mode, though, is that last one. The fact that Gandalf just says, peace out, I'm gone, like, that lines up with his character in every book he shows up in. Now, in Fellowship, he was actually with the party until, you know, he died. Spoiler warning, I guess? But, I always found that funny when people say spoiler warning afterwards. It's like, that's not how that works. Anyway, it's for comedic effect, don't worry about it. So, like in the Fellowship, Gandalf just straight up dies, and that's the only situation in which he actually leaves the party. However, in The Hobbit, there's a point, at least once, does it happen twice? I feel like it might, where the dwarves are just kind of going on their way, they're just going about their adventure, and they're like, wait, where's Gandalf? And he just peaced out, he was just gone. turns out he had some important stuff to do, but like, he didn't even say goodbye. He was just like, later. Like, he didn't even say that. He just disappeared. Just poof, gone. Like, I think that's kind of funny. Like, he always has kind of his own agenda, and he's gonna do his own thing. It's generally gonna be for the betterment of the people around him, but like, I don't know, he's just gonna do it. Honestly, I guess now that I say it that way, you could almost align Gandalf the Grey as black. I think people would freak out if they did that. Honestly, I think a lot of people are already maybe a little turned off or confused that this isn't an Azorius card. You know, Gandalf has actually become a nickname for Azorius control players. That's something that I've heard a lot of people say. You know, if you're going up against somebody running, you know, your Wrath of Gods, your Absorbs, a lot of people refer to that as like playing, you know, being a Gandalf or Gandalfing. I've heard people use that expression. Exactly where that came from, I don't know, but the idea of like the big powerful wizard who's just like casting spells and can't be bothered to like summon creatures to fight for him, kind of, it fits. Like, yeah, okay. But I don't think that playstyle or the flavor of white-blue necessarily aligns with Gandalf the Grey. I'll be very surprised if Gandalf the White is not white-blue. I feel like that is like kind of a slam dunk. It's right there. I feel like they kind of have to do it. I mean, he's the freaking white. Like, if Gandalf the White is not white-aligned, I'll be absolutely blown away. And I think Gandalf, in general, just being blue-aligned makes a lot of sense. He's a scholar. He is here to... Like, you know, he's a scholar of history because, I mean, heck, he was here for a lot of it. But in general, he's a smart person who is trying to learn about the world around him constantly. That is part of his deal. So being blue makes perfect sense. Now, him being red when represented as Gandalf the Grey, I actually think does make sense. And you see it a lot in the books. And a little in the movies, they did a good job of, you know, working with it, too. The range of Gandalf's emotions are actually very, very high. Like, it's easy to remember Gandalf as, like, this stoic mentor figure who was, like, level-headed under pressure and executed on what he needed to do. But when you actually read it, especially whenever he's interacting with Pippin, for some reason, like, in the movies they do a little bit with it, in the books, it is, like, every other word out of his mouth to Pippin is him ripping on him, calling him an idiot and a little fool. Like, it's happening constantly throughout those books. Like, even after he comes back, I'm pretty sure he still gives Pippin a hard time. And he shows when he becomes frustrated. He shows when he becomes worked up. He gets emotional, and it does... It does cloud his actions, but it does kind of drive the way he handles himself around others. Well, that's red. Like, it is red. And honestly, in the films, The moment with the Balrog, I mentioned that earlier. The moment with the Balrog is a moment in which he stands his ground against this, like, evil foe who is, you know, his equal in power. And he stands up, and in the books, it's very much this, you know, you cannot pass moment. And he has this little monologue that they did translate into the film as well, about the flames of Arnor and whatnot. And it's really cool. Like, I love that moment. And I love Ian McKellen's interpretation of it. And, like, that moment right there is why you hire Ian McKellen, because he was saying that to a tennis ball, and the dude freaking brought it. But that you shall not pass moment, he's not calmly dealing with, he's not a dude at work. He's not here to just knock out this task that he has to do. He's here to, like, level his hatred at something truly evil that he despises to destroy it. Like, that's... I mean, bruh, like, that is very Red. Like, channeling your anger is something that we see Red do a lot. And using emotion as power is very much aligned with Red. So I think Gandalf the Grey, as is it, actually makes a ton of sense. Like, really, when you break down what do these colors represent and what does this character, how does this character behave, I actually think it's kind of a decent fit. You know, obviously there isn't a color gray in Magic, so they had to work with what they had. And I think this makes sense. I actually really like it. I think this card is really cool. And they did a good job of creating a rare that has the potential to be powerful, that is going to be fun in a lot of game states, without being, like, super busted. We'll see Gandalf the White. I have a feeling that might be the second coming of Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, or something. I could be wrong, but it's gonna, like, it's very possible that that's gonna be a super busted, like, control mythic, and... that'll be the Gandalf that's busted that everybody, you know, shakes their fist at later. But Gandalf the Grey is, like, the fun EDH commander that when somebody says, I'm playing Gandalf the Grey, you're like, ooh, okay, we're going to see some Spellslinger shenanigans. Cool, bring it. Let's see what you got. Like, I know you're not going to see people going, oh, Gandalf again. Ugh. I don't think, anyway. I could be proven wrong on that. But I like it. This is just a cool Spellslinging creature that is a little bit expensive for what you get. It's only a 3-4 for 5. So the stat line is actually genuinely quite bad. I'm kind of surprised they didn't make it more. I mean, it's funny too. Like, we think of the wizard as this, like, old, decrepit, you know, figure, or the weakest member of our adventuring party. You know, that's something that we oftentimes, that's kind of the trope, right? The wizard is the squishy glass cannon that the tanks need to protect. You know, that's kind of the mode that a lot of us gamers think of in terms of what role is the wizard in the class. Meanwhile, as you can see in this artwork, Gandalf carries a freaking sword. Like, yeah, he's wearing a cloth robe, but he doesn't care. He's up front swinging and hacking and slashing. This guy can tangle with some people. He is, like, as far as wizards go, this dude is a battle tank. It's actually really cool. And so as a result, he doesn't really fit that mode. And to be honest, I think that kind of archetype showed up as a result of, like, needing to balance, like, party dynamics for gameplay in various, like, role-playing games and things. I think that's why we have the, like, wizard is the glass cannon damage dealer kind of situation, because Gandalf isn't really that at all. He doesn't mind stepping in front of people. That said, Gandalf in general is just so overpowered as a character that, like, if you actually made a decent analog to Gandalf in, like, a D&D game, he would just be the most busted class ever. Like, so they had to nerf something, and his combat prowess makes sense. But in any event, this card's great. Like, it's very fun. I think this is a cool casual EDH card. And as a result, this, so the Lord of the Rings booster packs are going to be just like Willy Wonka golden tickets. People are going to be spending an obscene amount of money to get their hands on them, and they are going to be cracking them, I think, in droves. I think we're going to see a lot, especially the collector boosters. People going after that one of the One Ring, 111. People are definitely going to be chasing that, and as a result, those packs are going to get opened. Gandalf the Grey is going to be one of the bulk rares people are very sad to see. So, for casual players like myself who just want to build the deck around this card, you're going to be able to find this for probably a quarter, you know, if that, honestly, on the secondary market within a month of this set dropping. I'm excited about that. There's a part of me that hopes I'm wrong and there is some kind of Spellslinger deck that wants this, but I have a feeling this is going to be a bulk rare. But it's a sweet character. It's super fun. I like it. Let's go. So thanks so much for checking out the podcast, whether you're on YouTube or on your podcast app of choice, Overthinking MTG. I appreciate you, and I'll catch you on the next one.